This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
Breaking news, LeBron is a Laker.
This Clippers team will win a championship this year.
Paul George, corner three.
Yes!
Bryant has to put it up with the buzzer.
Banks it in! He banks in the three! And the Lakers win the game!
What's good, everybody? Welcome back to the Battle for LA podcast, part of the Clutch Points and Blue Wire Networks. As usual, I am your host, Tomer Azarli, your Clippers beat writer for Clutch Points. I'm here, as usual, with our Lakers beat writer for Clutch Points, Ryan Ward. How you doing, Ryan?
What up?
And we got a special guest today joining us, Adam Morrison, radio analyst for the Gonzaga, Gonzaga Bulldogs. Adam, thank you for joining us. How you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. First of all, how's everything with you health-wise? I mean, I know this coronavirus thing has just swept the nation, it looks like. How's everything with you, your family, all that?
Everything's good. Washington State was one, I think, second after California to go into lockdown. So I've been in quarantine for about 16, 17 days, I think I'm on. I'm type 1 diabetic, so I'm definitely not, I haven't been out in public at all. So a little frightening like everybody else is experiencing, but we're making it through.
Wow, that I didn't know that about you. So you're being extra cautious with who you encounter, if you encounter anyone, right?
Yeah. It's family only, and they are, working from home. So they're in the same, mindset of not going out in public. And, my Amazon Prime has been firing away here, getting stuff delivered to the house. It's right now, and everybody's going through it. So it's just, every time I wake up, I'm just like, is this real? And I really think that we've just begun. So hopefully it passes. But I think we're in for a long haul.
Pretty surreal, huh?
Absolutely.
I mean, was it Seattle that was hit bad up there?
Yeah, Seattle was the epicenter. I live in Spokane, about 4 hours away, closer to Idaho on the east side of the state. But Seattle had that retirement home, I believe it was, that had a bad outbreak or whatever, and then it kind of spread. And then, SeaTac is an international airport, it was kind of a perfect storm from my understanding on, how it spread. And then, it just slowly spread throughout the country, and it's where we're at now. So it's, hopefully this goes away. I mean, obviously for the health of our fellow Americans, but, the economy too is a really scary factor. It's interesting to kind of sit back and just see what comes next. And it's just like hit after hit after hit. It's crazy.
Is it weird for you too, as with March Madness being canceled completely? I mean, that's never happened before, right?
Yeah, no, it's never happened. And I do games for Gonzaga on the radio. So we actually had the West Coast Conference Tournament in Vegas, and it was, I think, the only one completed. And so we completed ours, and then the Big Ten, ACC, everybody started canceling. So then when we flew home, when we touched down, that's when they made the announcement. And Spokane was a site, and Gonzaga was probably going to get a number one seed and probably be in Spokane. So everybody was bummed out about that. And then, obviously about 2-3 days later, they announced that the whole tournament is canceled. And it's, obviously you want to be precautious and safe, but people were really, really upset in this area because we would have had a home court advantage per se, and a number one seed and a really good team. So it was disheartening for that regards, but I think it was the right, in my opinion, it was the right move to do.
Now, when you look at just the players who don't have an opportunity, I mean, you have to feel for some of these guys. Like, I can't help but feeling bad for a lot of these guys who really worked most of their years, most of their lives, just to get to this March Madness tournament and not be able to play.
Absolutely. You know, I obviously was a college basketball player and played in the pros for a little bit. And so, you know, those memories are last a lifetime. They can help, you know, define you as a professional player to make it to that next level, can, you know, off your draft stock and things of that nature. And then just, you know, not having the opportunity to create memories with your friends, you know, your teammates are, and compete is disheartening because, you know, can you imagine if you're a senior and, you know, you were a guy maybe that kind of waited your turn and you were having a good season, and then all of a sudden, you know, you play your last game without it knowing it being your last game. And that's what happened to a couple of three of our seniors at Gonzaga's. You know, the West Coast Conference Championship game was obviously their last game and we won it, but that's not where, you know, we wanted to finish, obviously. And so, yeah, it's disheartening on many levels. And, you know, like I mentioned too, from, you know, just to get into like the economic part of it for Spokane, it was such a huge event that was going to happen for people. You know, and then adding in most likely from what we heard and talking to, you know, people in the business that Gonzaga was going to get, or, you know, Spokane was going to get Gonzaga as the number one seed. I mean, who gets to play in their hometown in the NCAA tournament? So,
right.
You know, it was a devastating blow on many factors. But again, I think it was the right move. You got to be precautious. You got to jump ahead of this thing from what I understand. And so I'm glad they did it. And, you know, I think really what started it all was the Rudy Gobert stuff, and I think that kind of woke everybody up, and I'm glad that, was it the Oklahoma City doctor that kind of saved the day and ran on the floor or whatever and postponed that game? And it kind of opened everybody's eyes to how serious and how easily this could spread. So, you know, it's just like everybody else. It's been just crazy every single day. It's just you read something new and something, you know, further that flames fear into you, economic-wise, health-wise, society-wise, politically. It just never stops. It's crazy.
I know Tamara and I were in the Clutch Points office when it all went down. I think I just got back from Lakers practice.
I think that was it. I got there in the morning, and we had heard that Gobert was dealing with an illness, and everyone was like, coronavirus is a joke. And then when the game started, didn't start, it was on pause, there was like a weird commotion in center court, and we're like, wait a second, what the heck is going on? And then all of a sudden, it was just, boom, Gobert has it, boom, Mitchell has it, and then boom, season suspended.
The Trump travel ban was like right in between there.
Right,
Something else happened the same day. It was like a domino effect.
I think it was some other college tournament that was still going on. But
I know the Big Ten was trying to do it without fans, and then I think they played one game, and then they just decided to cancel the rest of it, which was crazy in itself. But, yeah, it's just that whole week was just bananas as far as sports-wise because it's cancel. I personally think – I don't even think football is going to be able to go.
And really?
That's when I don't – I mean, how is it going to magically disappear, right? I mean, obviously you can flatten the curve, and, again, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but packing people into stadiums again just seems like an idea that would not be prudent because if it doesn't disappear, there's always second waves. And then from what I understand, I mean, vaccines take what? From what I've heard read is 12 months at the earliest to get them approved and get them fast-tracked. So that's, you know, it's longer than the upcoming football season coming up. So I don't know. Can you imagine, though, America, if they can't bet on football and watch football?
I've been playing fantasy football for years. I don't know what I'm going to do now.
Yeah. Well, you as a former athlete, what do you think about games being played without fans if it comes to that at some point?
I think, I think if I was a competitor, I would want to do it. I mean, it's not the perfect scenario, but, you know, like for the Lakers standpoint, I mean, they're having a historical season, you know, LeBron and AD kind of coming together in that nucleus. I wouldn't want to leave that on the table. and have that wonder why. So if I was still playing, I would be all for it. I mean, I wouldn't be the perfect scenario. Like I said, it wouldn't be cool, but at least you get to find out who's the champion, obviously, instead of everybody kind of wondering why. So I think I read somewhere today that they were trying to do quarantine in Vegas and then play all the games in Vegas, something along those lines. I think that's smart. I mean, it'll give people the ratings would be insane. And it would also, allow for a champion to be held. You know, I'm a big soccer fan, and if you're a Liverpool fan. I'm a Chelsea guy, but if you're a Liverpool fan, you ever won it since the 80s.
I know.
Talk about just postponing it. It's crazy.
There was three games. All we needed to win was three more games to clinch the title. Then we got knocked. We got knocked out of the Champions League. And I saw that was it today or yesterday? They said that game shouldn't have been played against Atletico. The second leg.
I remember Jurgen Klopp read an article and said he considered it a criminal act that they even played that game. He was so upset. But
I'm even more. I mean, it's just terrible luck. I mean, even with the Lakers, right? Like they hadn't made the playoffs in 6 years. And they finally get back on top and have a great chance of winning it all, and it just goes to shit like this. It's like you have no idea if this season will even finish. It's a weird thing to think about.
Yeah, to go back to your point, I'd want to finish it. If you could quarantine and test the players, which would be kind of an argument in itself, because then people would be like, well, what about testing the average Joe and whatnot? So you'd have to jump those hurdles PR-wise. But I just like look at LeBron. I mean, what is he? Year 17, and he's been fantastic his whole career. But you don't want to leave a historical year that he's having this season on the table and not wonder why. So if I'm the NBA, if I'm the players, it's not a perfect scenario. You're not happy about it, but I wouldn't want to leave it on the table. You know, I would just say, hey, let's try to play, and if we have to play in an empty gym, televise it, and let's go.
Yeah, I'm all for that too. I think all of us just kind of want that distraction, I guess you'd say, or something to be amped about instead of watching the same damn shows on Amazon Prime or Netflix or whatever. But and just to see competition again would be great. But
I totally agree.
Adam, I wanted to jump a bit back to your Gonzaga days. I mean, obviously, probably. Took a backseat, like you said earlier, in your first year. Second year averaged 19 points, 5 rebounds. Then that third year for you really jumped out, 28 points, 5 rebounds. What do you remember most from that season? Because you had one of the best college seasons we'd seen.
Yeah, I think I just made a real jump skill-wise in that off season. I, my freshman year I came off the bench. I had a really good senior-laden team, so I played, 16, 17, 18 minutes a game. And then going to my sophomore year, like I said, there was a bunch of seniors, so our younger core knew that we were going to have an opportunity to play, so I just really hit the gym. And then that helped me gain a lot of confidence and knew that I could be a scorer at that level. So then, after that season, my sophomore season, my eyes were, all right, I really think I could be a professional. Everybody dreams about it, but you don't know until you're good enough, I guess, or you have success at a certain level, and and so I really just improved and took advice of people that said what I needed to work on, and it took off from there. And I was lucky enough to have a good coaching staff and teammates that kind of took a backseat too, because to average 28, you're not passing the ball very much. So I had guys that were setting screens for me and they ran plays for me. But obviously I had a good year. I was efficient as well. I wasn't a volume scorer. So it was crazy back then too. The college basketball was viewed differently back then too. There was more coverage. Teams stayed together longer. There wasn't as much one and dones. So it was a little bit more hype than it would be now, as far as, leading the country in scoring or for another guy, I guess you could say. So Yeah, it was good times, and I enjoy it. And again, like I said, I'm an analyst now for Gonzaga, so it's kind of cool to come back full circle and be a part of the program again.
When you look at your scoring, I mean, you were just a machine. I mean, just going back through it again, at what point in your junior year did you just realize, all right, this is very real, you know?
I think it was the Maui tournament is when I had a kind of a breakout.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the national scene. We played Maryland in the first game, and I had a good game. I think I was 26 or 24 or something like that, and they had a good team, obviously. And then that Michigan State game was everybody talks about that game. Three overtime game, I had 43, I think. And, you know, and then we played UConn in the championship. And so I knew I could play at that level. But also, I should preface this, that's going into my junior year, from my freshman to sophomore year, I played on the U.S. qualifying team. It was Chris Paul, Sean McCann, Sean May, a bunch of guys who ended up playing in the league. And I made that team kind of as a nobody at that time, coming off my freshman year. So that kind of really gave me the overall confidence that I could play at that level. And then, like I said, I progressed. And then going into my junior year, I had the ultimate green light. I was very confident. So you combine those two things, you can put the ball in the basket a fair more times than other guys if you don't have to look over your shoulder about taking a bad shot or something like that. So it definitely was a wild ride, man. It was, like I said, the coverage back then was way different than it is now. So it was kind of like a traveling circus after a while. But you know, it gave me a name and allowed me to go to the next level, so I'm thankful for that.
Well, speaking of the next level, go ahead, Ryan.
I was going to say probably the same thing you were going to say. So what was it like after going through all that and then getting eyed by Michael Jordan to go play for the Bobcats?
It was good. I was only around Mike a handful of times. He wasn't the owner yet, and he wasn't even the GM yet. It was Bernie Bickerstaff was still the GM. So I think there's kind of a misnomer that Jordan handpicked me, which, that's not a bad thing either way.
Adam, you're supposed to just run with that. You're supposed to just run with it.
Well, no, but it was,
MJ picked me. We had a dinner the night before.
It was Bernie as well, Bernie Bickerstaff. So, but it was definitely a change, you know, demographic wise for me. The South is way different than the Northwest. I can tell you that much. I remember the first time I get there. One of the reporters asked me who my favorite NASCAR driver was, and I was like, Dale Earnhardt, and you know, I didn't know. Like, so
that's probably a pretty good answer, actually.
Yeah, the Intimidator, but so it was definitely a change of scenery, but being around Mike was, I've been around obviously celebrities and pro athletes, obviously I was one, and playing for the Lakers, so I've been around people that are larger than life, and Mike by far takes the cake as far as aura and the way people act around him, and just like his being, I guess you could say, is unmatched. So like when he's in the room or he's in presence of other people, people go literally bananas. And it's something to kind of see. And it's cool. And too, obviously I was born in 1984. So those Bulls teams were my favorite teams growing up, and most of America as well. So it was cool to be a part of that, part of his deal. And, you know, before, like I said, before he was even the owner, he was involved. So I just wish I would have got I had like 50 Jordan cards and never got one signed. I was too scared to ask him. And I just, really, I swear to God, I have like 50 to 70, you know, as a kid. And I just was too much of a pussy to go ask him. And I was always regretted.
So
I have like team ones, you know, like I have some really good ones, and like the Upper Deck one, because I know he only signs Upper Deck. I should just have him sign all the Upper Deck ones.
Oh, man, you're bringing me back. I forgot about all that stuff. Man, baseball cards were so much different back then. Now it's like, I heard the value is just like plummeted, right? They're just not the same anymore.
They're absolutely, yeah. They, I would get them signed just for mementos, you know. They're absolutely pointless now, I guess. But yeah, I just wish I would have done it because I have so much of his memorabilia growing up, and I just. It's weird, though. Like, how do you go up to somebody that's your employer and be like, hey, can you sign this for me? You know, like, get the fuck
just out. Just be like, hey, my friend wanted to sign. Do you mind? Or just keep it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, do you have any...
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, do you have any... I know you said you only had a few instances, you know, being around him or whatever, but is there any story you have?
There's a couple. Like, one, so we used to have an unwritten rule in the league, and most teams did it. If your team played each other in basketball or football, it was an automatic $100 bet.
Really?
So Gonzaga played Carolina in the Garden when I was after my rookie year, and we won. And so I saw him at the Christmas party. I was like, hey, you owe me $100. And I was just kind of like joking. He's like, oh, yeah, no problem. And he pulled out this thing had to be like $8,000 to $10,000 out of his, you know, his pocket. And
what?
Just peeled one. There you go. And then we used to play cards on the planes before all that crazy stuff in Washington went down. And we'd play Boo Ray, and then we'd play Texas Hold'em. And Mike, he barely flew with us because, like I said, he wasn't the GM. He wasn't the owner. He was a minority owner then. But he flew with us on one of the road trips. And somebody asked him, like, hey, do you want to play cards with us? He's like, sure. But then we were like, all right, you can't bring, like, $50,000 and just bet everybody off every hand. we're gonna cap it, like, $1,000 bet a street max. And so – him and Gerald Wallace were in a hand, and I'm a poker player, so I don't know if you guys are, but there was like a straight draw, flush draw on the flop, and you could tell Michael was drawn to something, and Gerald bet $300 into him, and Mike Witter goes, $300? I'd watch two monkeys fuck for $300. And just the way he said, you know, everybody's fucking lying and laughing and shit, but it's just like, yeah, like $300, like what the fuck, he's okay, you know, like he probably had a gut shot or something like that. So yeah, he was always cool, man. Like he really was. He was cool, and it was just cool to be around him because he was an idol of mine growing up. So yeah, that's my Michael Jordan story, and hopefully he doesn't hear it back or get pissed off or something. But that's what he said.
You mentioned betting. I wanted to pause real quick to tell everyone about our sponsor, Bet Online. You know, there's no NBA, NHL, or MLB right now, and you might think that there's nothing really to bet on, but you would be wrong. Our exclusive partner still has hundreds of sports events and games you can wager on, or you can even let them bring Vegas right to you with their online casino and blackjack. All are open 24 hours a day, all online, and all including their $750,000 poker series. If you're into props or entertainment betting, you can still bet on things like Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, heck, even stock prices. Just visit their website and join today to receive 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Be sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE, that's BLUEWIRE. Bet Online, your online wagering experts. Adam, I wanted to, before we jump too far into the NBA career, you experienced NBA championships, and you also experienced that heartbreaking UCLA game. Mm-hmm. Which one to you is more memorable as an athlete?
Oh, probably the UCLA game.
Really?
Yeah, the championships, you know, I didn't play, so they're nice, and I know that I contributed in some aspect that during that season, but, you know, the UCLA game is gone down in, college lore and all that stuff. And it's part of who I was as a player at that time. I don't shy away from it. I think that one has more memories, I guess, cause it was tough. The Lakers always treated me good, and I was, you know, we had a great locker room. I had great relationships with all those guys. And, but it was tough, you know, like you're not playing and then you get made fun of for not playing. So like those memories are kind of on the fence of being good and bad. But the UCLA game was one of those things that just, you know, it happened. 10 things had to go right for UCLA at the time, you know, with about 6 minutes left. They all did. You know, and it's just one of those things that it's part of life. But, you know, I've had people every podcast or any interview I've done that kind of goes back to my past. The question always gets up, and it truly doesn't really bother me as far as it used to, I guess. I've gotten over it, I guess you could say. You know, and what's funny now is, like, you see guys crying all the time and nobody hammers them. I got hammered for doing that.
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh, look at that. Like, it's so poignant. And it's funny how society changes and shifts a little bit. I chuckle a little bit at that, but also I don't wish, like, somebody to get hammered because they're kids at the time. And also, like, you know, if you put your heart and soul to whatever you do in life and it gets kind of taken out underneath from you right away, like where you think you're going to go on or move on or get a promotion or, you know, get proposed to somebody and say no, like it's tough. And that's kind of what it was for our team at the time. I mean, we were obviously up and we were going to play Memphis, who we lost to at their place in the middle of the season. We felt like we could beat that team, especially at a neutral site. And, you know, to be up 15, 16 with that much to go, you kind of look ahead. It's human nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always talk about the cliche that don't look ahead. Well, it's like you're up 15 with 5 minutes to go. It's kind of easy too. So that's why it was so deflating, because, you know, at the time we were like, pretty much in the Elite Eight, guys, and we have a chance to go to Final Four, first time in school history, and, you know, and we get to play a team that we're familiar with that we feel like is going to have more pressure on them. So I guess, you know, to round this out, is the UCLA game was definitely a bad memory, but it's something that I, you know, embrace. It's just part of life.
When you look at, I guess people don't want to use it as sort of the poster child, but, like, for the example of, you know, it's not over till it's over, I think that one sort of just takes the cake in terms of make sure, you know, the buzzer is 0-0 before you celebrate.
Absolutely. I don't think we were celebrating, but you're not wrong. But
you get complacent is what I'm saying. You start to, you know, complacent.
Yep. I think complacent and on your back foot a little bit. Would be the correct term. And then, like I said, I mean, they had plays that had to go exactly right. I mean, Jordan Farmar, who was, you know, obviously Laker and one of my teammates, made like a 16-foot runner with two guys in his face at the end of a shot clock. He misses that. We probably get the rebound, get fouled. Game over, right?
Mm-hmm.
We inbound it to J.P. Bautista, who's an 85% free throw shooter that year. He gets stripped. Could have been a foul. They call a foul, he goes down, makes it, we win, we squeak one out. You know, there's so many things that could have gone the other way. I always kick myself. I got a possession late in that game where I didn't drive it. I took like a baseline 14-footer or something like that, and I should have just backed the guy down and done, you know, like a little 10-foot jump hook in the lane and probably would have got fouled or could have manipulated myself into one. That's the one that always bothers me personally is, mm-hmm. you know, because everybody has an impact on the game or a play that they wish they could do in big games, no matter what level you played at. And that's one that really haunts me. It's like, man, I should have just put my head down and drove it. And I got a really good whistle that year. I probably would have gone to the free throw line. So, but yeah, like I said, it's part of the game. And, you know, I've gotten over it. If it took a while. If you asked me the same question 10 years ago, I probably would have told you to go fuck yourself. And hung up the phone. So, but, you know, time heals all wounds, I guess.
So I asked Ryan before. I was like, hey, Ryan, like, is Adam cool? Like, I don't want to bring stuff up he doesn't want to talk about. Because I don't know how people view that. But it's good to see that you've sort of moved on from it. And, you know, I guess I don't want to say accepted it, but, you know, it is what it is. So.
Well, it is, and like I said, like most people involved with athletics are, like I said, in life that they work really hard for, and then it kind of gets taken out. They can relate to that, and I think, you know, at the time I got hammered, but I had a lot of people like, hey, man, that was me my senior year when we lost in state. I did the same thing, but it was in the locker room. You know what I mean? They're like, I feel you, man. Like it is what it is. You know, I've been there before. It was when I got cut from. varsity going into my senior year, something like that, you know, like people understand, like if you work hard for something and it just doesn't go your way, it can be emotional. And like I said, it happens all the time. I mean, you watch the one shining moment, you see guys crying all the time. And I'm like, well, I guess I was the only guy that there was a problem with it, but so be it.
I told Tomer about the story you told me about Metal World Peace, to change gears a little bit. You remember about him playing in jeans, was it?
Yeah.
You got to share something. I mean, I've interviewed Meta twice now, I think, and he's all over the map, but he's such a good dude.
He's awesome. Ron is one of the best teammates I've ever had. I always tell people, because he has a bad perception of him per se, or he did earlier, but he always worked hard. He always had his teammates back, and he was all about winning every single time. So like, if people are like, oh, he's a jerk and he's a cheap shot, he's like, no, he's trying to win and he has your back. And it was great going into games knowing that if there was a scuffle, like, he had your back. He literally one time, I can't remember who we were playing, but we were in the tunnel, and we go in to do our you know, what time is it, game time or whatever, and he goes, all right, remember, guys, if you do open hand, it's only one game. Close fist is the whole season. fuck, I love this guy, dude. He's awesome. And me and Ron always matched up in practice, so we had a unique relationship. Uh-huh. Like we would battle against each other, and he was one of those guys that, because he'd always do that post move where he would, you know, get really low, and then he would, like, turn legally with his elbow out, and he would just elbow me all the fucking time. But he was, after practice, like, Adam, I'm so sorry, Matt. And, like, and he was sincere. He's like, I'm so sorry, man. I'm just beating the shit out of me. And he was cool. He was always like, you good, man? I'm like, yeah, man, it's all good. And, like, it wasn't malicious. But, yeah, the story was it was the second year we were playing the Celtics, and we lose, it was a game five at their place, so we're down 3-2, and we fly back, and I come in to go shoot at 8-9 in the morning, something like that, and Ron, they're doing a pre-draft workout, and one of the kids from Gonzaga is in it, so I kind of come in to just check him out, just kind of give intel back to our staff to see how he's doing, and Ron is in the other end in the corner, with his peak basketball shoes on, no shirt, jeans, and a belt, and going through like a whole workout by himself. And it was like on above the rim, but with a ball, but with the guy I can't remember the guy's name on the movie Above the Rim, where he's like playing and yelling at, that was Ron doing it by himself in the middle of the finals with jeans, no shirt, and his basketball shoes on, sweating, like fucking getting it. So, but he's awesome, and I love Ron. Every time I see him, I saw him down at Kobe's deal. He's cool as shit. We always chop it up for a little bit. He's just a good dude, man. I love him.
Yeah. Just nobody liked that guy. Nobody liked that guy. He's unique.
Oh, he's awesome. He really is, dude. And I'll tell you one thing. Like, you can judge somebody on how their kids behave, and this is the honest to God truth. His two kids, when I was down there, my daughter was 2 or 3 at the time. And I think his son was like 12, and his son would babysit my daughter at games, and we couldn't give him a dime. Like, he would refuse it. Yes, sir. No, sir. Look you in the eye. Like, both of his kids were just well behaved. So, like, I always tell people, like, Ron is a good person. Like, he's just a little bit out there, but out there is better than born. And so, like, sometimes when people are a little bit different, you have to embrace it. And so, yeah, he's one of my favorite teammates of all time, easily.
I don't know any good way to bring it up, but we've asked a lot of our guests this. Just, you know, January 26th, when the news comes down, where are you? Because I know I was at home. My friend thought, when the Kobe news came down, my friend thought I was pranking him, and I was like, no, dude, this is real. I called Ryan. Ryan was just an absolute shock. Where were you with that? Where were you with that?
Yeah, I was driving to go get something to eat here in town, and my sister texted me and she said, is this true? And so I see it, and I thought it was because, like everybody else, because LeBron passed him or whatever in the scoring or whatever. So I thought some idiot fucking posted something stupid. So then I pull up to where I'm going to go get a sandwich, and I pause to read it, and it's TMZ. So I'm like, well, it's probably valid. And then I open it up, and I read it, and I was absolutely shocked. I mean, I couldn't even go into the restaurant. I had to take a moment because I was emotional. And, you know, I drove home in a fog, really, like most people. And I just went home and was just, you know, kind of in a daze for like 2, 3, 4 days, really. And it made me really reflect on the time spent with him. It was, you know, obviously so sad and so sudden because he was such an icon and he was such a tough ass dude, man. Like, he's just so tough, and for that to happen to him, and for me as a father, I coach my daughter's sixth grade basketball team, and so that really hit home too. I mean, he was going to coach his daughter, and you could tell how much he really enjoyed it. And I get my cup filled with doing broadcasting and coaching with basketball. That fulfills me for basketball. And so it was extra sad in that regards as well, you know, to think about, you know, his family too. Because when I was there, his wife and him were so gracious to my then girlfriend and my two daughters' mom, because we were fish out of water. We didn't know LA, and they were always so nice to us and so cool, and he always told me whatever I needed, and it just was a day of reflection for sure. I mean, it was emotional. It was awful, obviously. So I'm glad I got to know him. You know, it's not every day you get to meet geniuses. You get to be around savants. You get to be around people that squeeze every ounce of what they have into their craft. And, you know, that wasn't just basketball for him, because he was a deep thinker. He was... He wasn't into bullshit. He wasn't into stupid stuff. You know, he was into, what can I do to make myself better? What can I do to push myself? What can I do to push other people? And you don't get to be around a lot of people like that in your life. And when he passed, it made me realize that, you know, he publicly defended me numerous times. You know, when I was out the league, he sent me I told you I was a Chelsea fan at the start when we got into the sports deal. And he knew I really liked Didier Drogba, as one of my favorite players of all time. And so the year after I'm not with the Lakers, Robert Lahr, the security for the Lakers, texts me and says, hey, what's your address? So I give him my address, and I didn't think anything of it. And I get a package in the mail, and it's you know, autographed game-worn Didier Drogba jersey. And it says, best wishes to Adam. And it's signed. And I always thought Kobe, like, made a phone call. Still cool. Still fucking awesome. Well, that night, I am scrolling through everything and emotional and reading stuff. And on Chelsea's Instagram page, it says, when Kobe visits Stamford Bridge. And the first picture is him holding the fucking jersey with Didier Drogba, and if you zoom in, it says to Adam. So he went up to him.
Oh, wow.
And got it signed. I still have it, and he got it signed for me. I never asked him for this, and he knew I was in a low point in my life. You know, I was out the league. So he sent that to me just kind of as like, hey, buddy, I'm thinking of you, you know? And that's what he did for a lot of people. He understood what his aura was, and so he would throw nuggets to people to kind of pick him up. And so that day was tough because, like I said, he publicly defended me, and he did that for me personally. Like, he didn't have to do that. And, you know, it was a very emotional day. And I'm just glad that I, you know, got to be around him, to be honest.
That's incredible, man. I didn't know that. It sounds like he was just extremely thoughtful of people, you know.
He was extremely thoughtful. You know, if you were a hard worker and you didn't, you know, kiss his ass, I guess is the best way to put it. He fucked with you. You know what I'm saying? So, you know,
yes.
Yeah. kind of being hard on certain teammates, but if you showed up every day and put your hard hat on and competed, he loved you. And like I said, he was a thinker, and I like different shit than just basketball. So, you know, we would talk about politics and other shit that people would think that he wouldn't be into. He was really big into films and whatnot. And this stuff everybody knows, but he just was like a savant, man. He really was, because he just wanted to grind and grind harder than anybody else and kick the shit out of everybody at everything he did. And it's hard to meet people like that. I mean, the guy never slept. Like, he slept 3 hours a day, 4 hours. He's one of those people that just had endless amount of energy and endless amount of drive. But then he also had a heart as well. So it was obviously heartbreaking. And I was just thankful, like I said, to be around him. I was thankful that I got the opportunity to go to his service down at Staples. And I mean, everybody knows this, but the Lakers did that was one of the best memorials anybody could do, because it was obviously sad, but there was laughter. There was a good vibe in there. You get what I'm saying? I know it was a sad time, but it wasn't so glum. It was also, let's be thankful that we got to be around him. I thought all the speakers were fantastic. And, you know, I was just really thankful that I got to experience that as well and kind of say goodbye and, like I said, reflect on my times with him, because, you know, at the time when he's defending me, it was not fashionable to be an Adam Morrison fan, and he always stuck up for me, just out of the kindness of his heart, you know. So it was a shitty, shitty, fucking awful day, man. I think about him all the time, just because it's just so real that he's not here.
Yeah, that service was, it was the celebratory feeling, right? Like, it was very sad, but at the same time, uplifting, right? Yep. I remember, I mean, I was trying to keep it together watching that the whole time, and then I lost it when Jordan went up there, and he's already in tears, you know, and you're like, oh, my God. And then you realize how much he meant to him, you know, as just somebody that Jordan mentored, right? Like, it's just incredible.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, look, I told you I've been around Mike, and I don't have like I've never had a serious relationship, but like Mike, as people could kind of tell, like, probably didn't open himself up to a lot of people. And so for him to share that stuff was incredible, because, you know, he's Michael Jordan. Like, you know, he's always been like, fuck you, in a good way, but he's a competitor. Yeah. And so for him to say like, hey man, I actually like love this person, and I actually, you know, respected him as a person, as a father and a human being, and he made me better, I thought it was fantastic, because, you know, that's obviously hard to do, and, you know, I don't think that's in Mike's character. I mean, look at Mike's, you know, Hall of Fame speech. He was, like, telling everybody to go fuck themselves, basically. You know, and so for him to get up there and kind of open that up was, and then, too, I mean, Vanessa Bryant was unbelievable. She didn't owe anybody anything, right? And for her to get up there and battle through that sucker and talk about her daughter as well was incredible, because she could have mourned on the side like anybody else would have. I'm a father of three, and there's no way, honestly, I could have got up there and talked about, you know, a significant other than, you know, my child like that. And she powered through that sucker, and it was amazing. I mean, I was just so thankful and blessed that I had the opportunity to be there in person and see old friends. But again, the Lakers did such a good job on that whole deal.
Adam, I wanted to jump ahead to another topic here. Your game coming in would have translated really well, in my opinion, into today's NBA, this sort of run-and-gun style. How do you think your game would have fared with today's NBA?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. You know, I was more of a finesse, skilled player, I guess, for my time. I'm a little bit on the thinner side, right? And so I think it probably would have translated better, you know, in this era to, you know, because when I was still playing, we still threw the ball. There were still post players. You still threw the ball in the post. And then if you, you know, weren't Michael Cooper defensively, you were a bomb. So, like, it's definitely different. But you know, also I don't like the what ifs too. I guess are kind of cheap because I didn't play as good as I should have, and you know I was unfortunate. I had the injury too. I tore my ACL my second year, actually against the Lakers, closing out on the slowest player in you know the history of basketball, Luke Walton, who's one of my you know good friends from playing days. And we when I got to the Lakers, we joked about it. He's like, "What were you fucking thinking?" I was like, "I know, man. Like, I don't know why I like closed out on you because it caused an injury." But yeah, I think you know in today's NBA, I would have fared. But also, you know, I got my opportunity and didn't play the best, so I don't like to use that as a crutch, I guess. But I guess you could probably say, you know, with the scoring and the open play, and then the ability to take quick three pointers, you know, without throwing it into the post or anything like that, probably would have fared better for me.
That's fair. Okay. Do you enjoy watching this style of basketball, this sort of run and gun 3-point offense?
I do. I think the game is more skilled than it's ever been. I think the majority of the superstars are good dudes as well. I think I'm not completely a huge fan of analytics in the regards of, you know, sometimes if you come off a pick and roll or whatever, you got to take in a wide open 14-footer, right? I mean, you can't just take threes and wide open layups.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say I think it's bad per se that, like, the, you know, back to the basket players don't really exist anymore. And, you know, you can argue whether that's true or not, or if that's, you know, the right assessment. But then all it takes is like a Shaq to come around again or somebody that dominant, then everybody would follow as well. You know how it is. It's copycat league.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like it. I think it's fun. You know, the skill level is unbelievable now. Do you like seeing 35 three-point attempts? Not always, but I get it. I mean, the guys are so skilled now that it's not a, you know, high percentage shot, and a lot of people do effective field goal ratings as well. So I can see both sides because it's morphing down to college basketball now. But the problem is the guys aren't as skilled. So I watch a lot of shitty basketball players take some really fucking bad shots night out, and I'm just like, fuck, man. Like, Steph Curry, blame you for this one, you know.
Yeah, so I was actually going to ask, like, you've seen the impact it has on college ball where guys are now just taking basically threes and layups.
Absolutely.
Is that good? I mean, you said you watched some shitty basketball, but is it good in a way? How do you view that, the effect on college?
Well, that's the thing is, like, in the NBA, obviously, and this is, you know, no-brainer, Captain Obvious, everybody's skilled, right? I mean, they're in the league for a reason. So those shots that are considered bad shots have a higher chance to go in, and the guys can get hot and blah, blah, blah. But in college, you still have, you know, your 6-7 post players and your wing player that could barely dribble, but he's a good defender. You know what I mean? So there's a gap skill-wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not as well-rounded. So, you know, if you try to implore that philosophy, it's keeping the floor open and – you know, higher scoring, which college basketball is trying to get into, which I think they do because the viewership is really gone down.
Mm-hmm.
It's just harder, though, because it's like, well, even if you open up the game, the fucking guy taking the shot can't shoot. So it don't matter what you do with the offense. It doesn't matter. So you could go both. You can argue both ways, in my opinion. I do like coaches that allow players to open the floor up a little bit because I think some of the issue with college basketball, you know, aside from the political aspect of it is, you know, it's a little bit too much coach driven, and I understand mm-hmm. why, but also, you know, you'll get these games and you look at the box score and it'll be 55-52 and you're like, fuck, man, like I can get why people don't want to turn on the channel sometimes. Right. I mean, you go look at any NBA game, it's 115-125. And
on a regular basis,
you know, and so I get it. And look, I'm not saying college basketball is bad, but I'm saying it takes a while, I guess, for the wave to kind of filter down. Because when I was over in Europe, those kids grew up with a 24-second shot clock, and they play high pick and roll from an early age, right? So that style has always been around. Now it's starting to slowly go to college where the, you know, the four-out or five-out high ball pick, make your read, and play off of that. But when you try to do that with less skilled players, it's going to look really shitty, is my point. So it gets to be kind of funny when it's like, all right, not everybody can be the Warriors, and not everybody can shoot bad, you know, bad, quote-unquote bad threes like Steph Curry and make them, and, or you can't shoot on the first ball, you know, ball swing on the, you know, first side when the defense is loaded up. You go miss, 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 miss. In the NBA, some of those are going to go in, so it's not as bad. So, I don't know. I watch a lot of games, so sometimes I'm just, like, jabbing my eyes out with my pencil, man, because I'm just like, holy shit, this is bad.
Well, I got two questions for you to end this or wrap this up. Do you think that a revolutionary kind of coach needs to come in with a defensive style to stop the three-pointer solely to change the way the game's played now? Because it's, you know, the game's always evolving, right? So it's got to be an inevitable shift at some point. And then the other one is going to be, who do you enjoy watching the most in the NBA right now? Which player?
Well, I think as far as the defensive, all it takes is one team to win a championship with a defensive philosophy first, I guess. So I think maybe, but I don't know how you would. I've always wondered, and maybe I'm just, and I understand the defensive 3-second rule, but I don't know why some teams, you know, try to run zones or like box and ones just to try it. I know the Raptors kind of do something similar to that where they, you know, they show high or they, you know, they're above the free throw line defensively and they kind of shadow a player and kind of leave a guy open. So I guess it takes somebody to kind of do that and win for it to change. But again, like for me as a player, former player, and as a fan, I like the scoring. I just think there's too many threes, and I can't just rely on, you know, like a 14-footer is not a bad shot sometimes. It's just what the fucking defense gives you, especially if you play pick and roll. You know, the analytics guys say it's bad, but I think you kind of have a mixture of both is what I'm trying to get at. You know, and then as far as favorite player I like to watch, yeah, I like the kid out of Dallas.
Luka?
Really, yeah, Luka is fucking nasty, man. Just the way he can kind of survey the floor and his ball screen reading is fantastic. You know, he's probably my favorite young player. I've always been a LeBron fan. I think he gets too much flack from the other side. But I also understand it. You know, we're like I mentioned earlier, we're kids of Jordan, so it's hard for anybody to say that, you know what I'm saying? Like when you talk about your all-time favorite, everybody gets a little bit, the antennas go up. But I've always respected him. I've been around him a few times. Good dude. You know, he gives back to the community, all that stuff. So I like watching him play. And again, it's sad that we just might not know if he has a chance to win a championship with a third team, you know, and bring the Lakers back to their former glory. And isn't he leading the league in assists this year?
Yeah. It's like 10.7 or something like that. Something close to that.
It's fucking insane. He's in his 17th year. I mean, the guy is just remarkable, and I think he's a good dude, and that makes me like him more, you know, because you guys cover the NBA, you know, in professional sports. There's some assholes out there, so.
They're all perfect
protective
human
shield. I shouldn't say that. Yeah, protective shield. I get it. And look, I just fucking rag college basketball. My boss is probably gonna call me tomorrow. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Gonzaga plays good style, and that's the truth. We led the country in scoring, but some of the teams that we fucking play, I'm like, sign me up for coach, and I'll take $500,000 a year.
At least it's not college football, man, where it's like scores of 72-3. You know what I mean? It's like, why were these teams on the field at the same time? makes no sense. I got buddies that love college football. I'm like, what, dude, what are you watching? Go play a video game. You're going to get the same score. Like, it's just, it's no different. I always think it's a joke.
Yeah. No, I get it. There's, you know, there's such a hierarchy on the power programs in both sports that you get some of these games on the schedule and people shrug their shoulders like, what are the ratings down? You're like, well, fuck, man. Like, look who they're playing and look at the outcome. I mean, it's who wants to watch blowouts? I don't. So
yeah,
totally.
Like playing the Washington Generals like every week, right?
Pretty much.
Adam, I'll ask my final question here for you. Having been a Laker, having played against the Clippers at times, you've seen what it's like here in LA. I mean, the Clippers were pretty bad when you guys were playing them, but you know, now you got two powerhouse teams, two legit championship contenders. What do you make of, you know, this is the Battle for LA podcast, so what do you make of the Battle for LA right now, even though it's on pause?
I think it's fantastic. I think Steve Ballmer's done amazing of bringing life into that. I mean, there was momentum before that, but I think he's a perfect owner to didn't they just sign that the stadium deal?
They just bought the Forum from Madison Square Garden, yeah.
Oh, okay, so yeah, I think it's great. I'm actually a Kawhi fan as well. I'm a Doc Rivers fan as well. I think coaches the right way. I think it's really good for the city. I think it'd be cooler if they get their own building too, because then you kind of have your own, you know, staple or whatever you can put on your own style. I guess I know they change it and everything, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think it's fantastic. I mean, there's no reason that that market shouldn't have two teams and shouldn't be very attractive to all the free agents. And so I think with Kawhi going there, you know, and Paul George was perfect. I'm still puzzled, though, and I know this is way off topic, but how just the what if with the Chris Paul trade, you know, what the NBA was thinking at that time when we're talking about the markets, right? Like, why didn't they let that happen?
Still makes no sense. No sense whatsoever. You know,
I didn't get it either at the time. I was like, this is like your biggest market. Like, why wouldn't you want them to? But we digress.
They were just going and stacking the chips. Didn't they already have Dwight at the time? They had Kobe, right? So they would.
No, they didn't have Dwight yet. He was the trade set up for like immediately after, from what I remember. Yeah, but it was basically reloading with Kobe, right?
Yeah. Just yep.
Giving Kobe another 5 years of competing.
Another run. Yep. Another run.
That changed the history because
they would have been good.
Had five straight 51 seasons, setting up, you know, setting the stage for this team now with Kawhi and PG. You know, setting the stage for Steve Ballmer to buy the team. I don't know if any of that stuff happens without that. So it's just the domino effect of what ifs are just astronomical with that kind of move. It's insane. Maybe the Lakers do win another title. It's crazy. You know, the pressure on Kobe's Achilles, maybe he doesn't tear it there.
Yeah.
Well, they haven't won another title since that. Adam was on the last team that they won. So it was 10 years ago.
10 years ago. Yep, it was 09, 010. Yep. Yeah, fun times, man.
Adam, anything you wanted to plug, promote on your end? Maybe a foundation or anything like that? Whatever. Anything you want to promote?
No, man. Just everybody, honestly, stay healthy. I mean, everybody's saying it, but, you know, I would be a naysayer, but I think it's going to be a long haul, so buckle down, folks, and hopefully you can find enough Netflix to not burn it out and make peace with your loved ones because you'll be around each other for a while.
Well, thank you for joining us, Adam. Real quick, again, you can follow us at we follow Ryan Ward at Ryan Ward LA on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. You follow me at Tomer Azarly, that's TomerAzarly on Twitter and Instagram. Adam, do you have a Twitter or Instagram at all? Or are you off social media?
I have Instagram, but I have no Twitter. And there's a Morrison35 that's been claiming to be me for years. So please fucking say that's not me. It's never been me. I've never been on Twitter. I'm scared of that fucking rat hole.
I don't blame you, man. I don't blame you. It's a necessary win for us.
Brian hates it. It's like a cesspool of negativity is what he says.
Yeah, I hate it, man. It's all
it is. It's just
shitty people.
Yeah, they just get on and fucking make fun of you and shit on you, and it's like, well, what have you done, fucker? You know, and that's and
exactly.
You, you know, you look down and you're like, you're in a 30-minute argument with somebody that you don't even care about, and they
time
got their rocks off because they got you to respond. So I don't know. So yeah. I'm on Instagram. And my Instagram page is just mostly with me and my kids, so it's nothing cool or anything like that. I'm a pretty boring guy.
Well, once again, if you guys could leave us a review wherever you guys get your podcast, Apple, Google, Play, iHeart, Spotify, just leave us a 5-star review. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, concerns, all that stuff, shoot it over to us on Twitter, where Brian loves, and or Instagram, that works too. And yeah, hope you guys enjoyed. Adam, thank you again for joining us. We really appreciate it. We hope you stay safe, stay healthy. And I hope we get sports back soon. I know it's not likely, but we need some sort of move back to reality, I feel like, just to not go crazy. So
agreed. Right. Man, I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.